Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Sally O'Cordy, and welcome to Public Advocate. Today, my guest is Tracy Wolf, and Tracy Wolf is the mother of a Gardasil-injured young girl. Gardasil is the HPV vaccine, was administered for human papillomavirus, and this is a very, very serious outcomes are resulting from these vaccines, all of them, but among young girls. This one is doing all kinds of damage, and I am very grateful to Frida Birrell, Frida Birrell of SaneVax.org. She co-administrates that with Norma Erickson, and I've interviewed both of them. Lovely women. Certainly among the smartest women I've spoken with, and dedicated, passionate about getting the word out about what this vaccine is doing to young girls. And now, of course, they're administering it to young boys. And in New York State, we even have a bill, hold your hat, we even have a bill pending to administer it to four-year-olds without parental consent, which means without parental knowledge. And because it is a sexually transmitted disease and categorized as such, if a child accepts this vaccine, this four-year-old who, if given a lollipop, will say yes to anything, then if something happens to this child, if this child dies, which is completely plausible, they don't have to report it because it's an issue of privacy. It's an issue of privacy. So your child dies. You don't know why. The school doesn't have to tell you. This is the world. This is the legislation that is being proposed. Can you imagine anything more demonic than that? I cannot. Well, you know, it's so hard. There's such competition when it comes to vaccines. I know here in New York City we're trying to ply our kids through the age of five with 55 doses of vaccines, and which is higher than anywhere currently. But I understand the CDC schedule has just increased to include through the age of seven an annual flu shot. So they've actually surpassed New York City, the basic schedule for the CDC, which all these states are complying with. So all I can say is homeschool. All right, let me pick up my guest, Tracy Wolf, right now.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for coming on, Tracy Wolf. I appreciate your telling us the story of your child before and after the Gardasil vaccine.
Well, thank you. Shall I start?
Yes.
Okay. Back in 2007, my daughter was 13 years old, and we were preparing to send her to Germany by herself for the first time. We had gone as a family before, but we thought, you know, it would be fun for her to go by herself and spend her birthday there with her grandfather. So I took her to the doctor. She's diabetic. I took her to the doctor to see if it was okay, if they would agree. And they said yes, as long as she could change out all of her stuff and figure out the insulin, then she would be fine. And during that appointment, they brought up Gardasil. And I remember seeing all the commercials on TV saying, one less, you know, protect your daughter. And the endocrinologist had told me that it was imperative that she be vaccinated for everything that come along because of her weaker immune system having diabetes. And so, you know, I was scared, and I listened. I trusted the doctors, and I said, of course I want to protect my daughter. So she got the first shot, and that was probably about May of 2007. Then she traveled to Germany, and her grandfather said that things were different. Her personality was different. She got angry really fast. She would get overheated. But he just figured, you know, that it was had to do with her hormones. You know, things were changing in her body. And so he didn't think a whole lot of it. And she came home 4 weeks later. While she was gone, our 12-year-old boxer had passed away. And I didn't say anything to her while she was gone. I didn't want to break her heart. And when she came home, she asked where he was, and I told her, and she tried to cry, which was very unusual because she was always a very shy and very sensitive child. And, I mean, you know, her father could give her the stink eye and it would make her cry. So she just found out her dog died, and she was making these spitting and sputtering noises trying to cry, and it was very strange. So that was, now looking back, that was the first symptom that we noticed. And then, so she went to bed. She didn't have any jet lag or anything like we all had in the past. Thought that was a little unusual. But then she stopped sleeping altogether. She just couldn't sleep. Something kept waking her up, and we couldn't figure out why. And her personality just kept changing and getting worse. And her heart, she would say things like, it's happening, and you could just see her chest, like, about just pounding, like her heart was going to come right out of her chest. And she would say things that, like, voices made her sick, and faces made her sick. And when it was happening, we all had to be quiet, and this was just, it was strange. And, you know, of course, I took her to the doctor and trying to figure out what's going on. You know, they sent us to a cardiologist. So she got to wear a heart monitor overnight, and they determined that her heart rate was high, but it wasn't what they considered dangerous. It was just high. So they didn't want to do anything else. And then about this time, Alexis is not sleeping at all, less and less sleep. And she's getting very angry, and her mood swings are just crazy. She says she's cramping. She feels like she's going to start her period, but nothing would happen. And, you know, again, we're going to doctors, and she started throwing up. When it happened, she would throw up. So then her pediatrician sent us to a gastroenterologist. We went and we saw him. We told him what was going on, and he suggested taking some Zantac for a week for heartburn. So she took that, and nothing changed. It didn't change anything at all. She just, you know, just kept getting worse. I think at that point she had had the second shot, because with all these doctor's appointments going back and forth, you know, trying to get answers for a new doctor or something, then they mentioned, well, number two is, we need number two, that she's due for that booster. So she'd get the second one, and things just would just, her attitude, everything just got worse. I mean, literally she was going crazy before us, and we didn't know what to do. And so we went back to her endocrinologist and trying to figure out what was going on, because I figured, you know, maybe it was diabetes related, but every test that they did was fine. You know, her blood sugars, her A1C, everything was fine. So she couldn't figure out what it was, and she thought, well, maybe it was just a teenager acting out because of her diabetes, so she wanted us to see a psychiatrist. So we see this lady, and I explain to her, and at this point, I'm a wreck. I'm crying constantly because I can't figure out what is going on. My daughter has completely changed, you know, and they just keep marking it off, saying, oh, she's a teenager. It's teenager, and it's hormones and her body changing. Well, I'd never known a kid like that to change so drastically. So we see the psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist, after talking to Alexis alone for about 15 minutes, she determines that, oh, she must have been sexually assaulted by her grandfather when she was in Germany. That's why she's acting out like this. So I talk to Alexis, and she swears, no, nothing happened, no. He was good. He was, nothing happened. They didn't do anything. You know, I talked to him, and he, no, absolutely not. Nothing happened. And I wholeheartedly believe them. I spoke to her about it numerous times. Her story never changed. But the psychiatrist, that's what she wanted to believe. So from there, she sent us to another psychiatrist who, of course, read her records and thought that my daughter had been molested, and I was just ignoring it. But again, her symptoms are getting worse. She's throwing up all the time now. These things that are happening just keep happening, and her face winces up, her eyes get teary, her mouth drools, but nobody can figure out what's going on. So finally, January of 08, we're still, you know, just trying to figure out what's going on, going doctors back and forth. Well, they said, okay, she's due for the third shot. And I said, could this be causing it? And the doctor said, oh, no, no. This isn't going to cause all this stuff, you know. But she has to have that last booster. Okay, so she got the last one, and within about 3 or 4 weeks after that shot, she was hospitalized. She had just, you know, was losing weight at a rapid speed. Things were just getting so bad. She was getting in trouble at school. She was making straight Fs. I mean, this was an honor roll student. She was honor roll the previous year. She ends up going into the hospital. They ran tests on her. They ran all kinds of urine tests, blood tests. I think they did a CT scan, and they determined there was nothing medically wrong with her. And rather than send her home, they sent her to the Children's Psychiatric Hospital because they believed that she was just acting out and doing this for attention. So then they sent her there, and that was just horrible, horrible. They didn't know how to take care of her diabetes. She was throwing up constantly. Her blood sugars were plummeting. They told her she wasn't allowed to talk to anybody. She couldn't, you know, be near anyone. Basically, she was being punished. And this went on for 4 days. And then the fourth day, they called me, and they said, we've witnessed something very disturbing. We want to put her on a new medication. And I said, well, what did she do? You know, granted, I was going there every day during visiting hours and seeing her. And they said, well, she was eating her vomit. We gave her a bucket and told her she had to throw up in the bucket, and she wouldn't get anything else to eat. So she started eating it out of the bucket. And I was mortified. I had never heard of anything before. I was a wreck. I could not believe this was happening, and no one could give me any answers. The next day, they called and they said, she's stable. You can come get her and take her home. And I said, what do you mean stable? Yesterday, she was eating vomit out of a bucket. And they said, well, she's stable. Come get her. So I went there, and she's bouncing off the walls, waiting for the paperwork to be done, and I took her out of there. It happened again on the drive home. She threw up. We got home. She was hungry. She ate something. It happened again, and she threw up. This continued all night. The next day, we were frantic, calling her doctors and saying, you know, help us. Help us. We need help. And so her pediatrician pulled some strings and got her into the UNM Children's Psychiatric Hospital. Now, this place is completely different. They were understanding. They were wonderful. They even said right off the bat, this is not a behavioral issue. Something else is going on, but we understand you need answers. So they took her in. And this was on a Friday night. And they were trying to concentrate on getting her to sleep, so they gave her high doses of trazodone just to try and get her to sleep. Because I think at this point we were thinking that it was, you know, sleep deprivation. Lack of sleep was causing something. And so they loaded her up on trazodone. She still could not sleep. She was a vegetable. She sat there and drooled, and her eyes rolled back in her head, but she couldn't sleep. Every time she would try to sleep, it would happen. So the following Monday, the doctor comes in, and I'm telling her everything that's gone on, and it happens. The doctor looks at Alexis, and she says, I think she's having a seizure. I thought, oh, my gosh, nobody has said anything like that, you know. So she ordered a EEG to be done right away. So we went up to the main hospital. She had an EEG done, and it showed that she was having just so much activity, seizures cracking off all over the place in her frontal lobe. And they said, ha, there you go. That explains her personality change. You know, everything about her personality was just different. Okay, but what's causing it? What's happening? So from there, they sent her to the main hospital, trying to do tests, trying to determine what was going on. they couldn't keep her in any one room because she was crazy. She was trying to run away from the sitters. She was unstable, would fall a lot. She would try to socialize with all the sick kids in the pediatric unit, try to socialize with the parents. She wasn't following rules, so they didn't know what to do. They just kept moving her. She was flashing people. She was pulling her pants down and peeing on the floor. She was doing so many things that I never in a million years would have ever imagined my sweet little kid doing. Every single night, you know, I was told of stuff that was going on. Well, I was there every day visiting her and everything. I had another daughter I had to take care of at home, but I was doing everything I possibly could. And they ran all kinds of tests, tons of blood tests, urine tests. They did many CAT scans, many MRIs, many EEGs. They did two spinal taps. And in the second spinal tap, they determined that she had encephalitis. Something had caused encephalitis, swelling of the brain. And they said, you know, possibly exposed to a virus or something. Well, she hadn't been sick. She hadn't had so much as the sniffles. She had been very healthy. She had been fine. So where this virus came from, I have no idea. She never showed any other symptoms or anything. All I knew was with each one of these shots, she got worse and worse. So she ended up staying there at that hospital for 6 months straight, unable to come home, as they were trying to figure out what was going on and what to do. They finally determined that she needed therapy, so they got her admitted into the Texas Neuro Rehab Center in Austin. So me and her father had to go to the hospital with her bags packed, pick her up from the hospital, take her directly to the airport, and fly her out to Texas Neuro. And it was a very similar setup to the psychiatric ward she was in. They had different cottages and things where they put you at a certain level of what you could do. Alexis was just, it was horrible. It was absolutely horrible leaving her there because for the first time I couldn't see her daily. I couldn't get updates from the doctors and the nurses daily. I had to follow rules and only talk to her during visiting hours on the phone, you know, and it was limited in time. It was horrible. Anytime she would try to tell me what was going on, somebody would stop her. She wasn't allowed to speak about those things on the phone. And her father got really upset, really angry about it. So he, after 3 months, he flew down there and got her and brought her home. And the doctors didn't really want her to come home at that point. I think they were thinking that she was going to stay about a year, but nobody had told us. So she came home, finally. She was hospitalized from the end of February 2008 until September 30th, 2008. And so she came home. We're trying to reacquaint her with everything, and I'm scared to death. I'm scared she's going to be flashing people from her bedroom window. The seizures still weren't under control. She was still running, trying to get out of the house, and it was scary, very scary. So here we are, 7 years later, still suffers daily seizures. She's gone through so many different kinds of treatments. She's been on so many different kinds of medications. She even in 2010 had a device implanted into her chest called a VNS therapy. It's a vagal nerve stimulator. It's similar to a pacemaker, except the lead goes up your neck and is clamped onto your vagus nerve, and it sends continuous pulses. And the theory is it's supposed to help redirect your brain and maybe stop the seizures. But she's had it since 2010, and it really hasn't made any difference that we can tell. She still has a lot of seizures. Right now, currently, she's down to maybe about 5 or 6 during the day that we see. We don't know how many she has at night. Sometimes it can be as much as two an hour. And we haven't really figured out any kind of correlation, like the weather plays a part or food, anything. We cannot see any kind of correlation of why it's happening or why more than others sometimes. But it's been miserable, absolutely miserable. She's going to be turning 21 years old next week, and she has the mentality of about a third grader. She has to wear diapers because, you know, the seizures make her lose control. Her bowels are just messed up beyond belief. Every single time she goes, she clogs the toilet. It's horrible. I give her laxatives for that and make her drink lots of water, but it doesn't seem to help. Her whole body is just messed up. And we've been able to keep her diabetes under control, oddly enough, but everything else is just messed up.
Well, I would like to, at this point, recommend you call Dr. Carly. She reverses vaccine-induced diseases. And this is something, I'm going to send her this audio tape if it's okay with you.
Absolutely, sure.
This is unbelievable what your child has suffered. I am absolutely agog, and it takes a lot to surprise me. Holy moly. Oh, my gosh, Tracy, what a nightmare.
Yeah, it's been horrible. And, you know, like I said, she was a normal kid, super sweet, real shy. You know, but if you met her now, you would swear that she was diagnosed autistic, you know, at a very, very young age. You would never know that she was perfectly normal, perfectly healthy, traveled to Germany by herself. She can't even make her own lunch by herself now. She can't bathe herself by herself. So it's taken everything from her. She is now disabled.
Right, right. Well, she's still in pain that it you keep referring to keeps happening?
Yes.
Oh. Well, what is it?
I'm sorry. Yeah, the it, is, that would be a seizure.
Oh,
you
I
know,
see.
Before when she would say, it's happening, we didn't know what was going on. We, you know, it, what's it? And she would describe it saying, everybody looks scary, everybody sounds scary, voices make me sick and faces make me sick on TV and so even to this day when a seizure starts happening, she'll say it's happening, and then she says everybody looks scary. So I'm, you know, 7 years later, it's still the same thing going on. And when you ask her, you try and get her to describe what is it, what does it feel like, or what does it look like. It's hard for her to explain, you know, because she has very few words now to be able to explain exactly what she's feeling. But, I mean, it sounds to me almost like she is, having a drug-induced trip or
right.
something. You know, she's seeing
yeah.
things. The walls are crawling. People are wavy, you know.
Right.
It's just...
Wow. I'm speechless. I really am actually, for the first time in my life, speechless. I think everybody needs to hear what you have gone through and what your daughter has suffered. Now, beyond what your daughter has suffered, which is a nightmare, you were saying that this cost you your marriage, because a lot of parents of vaccine-injured children have found their way to divorce court. And
yes.
Would you like to say a few words about that? Because I think it's important that people realize these situations do break up families.
Yeah, well, it's hard. It's a lot to take in. And, you know, when these things happen, you know, unfortunately, it's not just the person that had the vaccine injury that's affected. I mean, it's everybody that child is involved with, their family members. It affects parents and siblings and aunts and uncles. It's horrible. You know, you lose friends because of it, because they don't understand. Family members don't understand how to cope or how to support. So it's crazy. It is absolutely crazy. You think you have a strong support system and lots of friends and family that are there to help you, and you know, in the midst of all this, you turn around and you're alone. Because
everyone else wants to go back to their happy lives. Nothing is more isolating than vaccine injury. I absolutely understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
Nobody, I'm sure, it would have been impossible to find a babysitter at any point in this, nor would you have wanted to, I'm sure. But you deserve some free time. I'm sure you'd like that. So your husband left because he couldn't handle it? What exactly is the reason he left?
Well, you know, things just got really rocky, really rocky. He wasn't, the whole time she was in the hospital, he went and visited her maybe 10 times. And that's out of, you know, the 6 months that she was hospitalized here in Albuquerque. So, you know, that it landed on me. I was there every day, going back and forth. Plus, I was trying to make my other daughter's life as normal as possible. You know, it's hard. It's just very hard.
Well, I hope you will describe what you said to your husband when your daughter was going to visit him, because it lets people know what the daily routine is for this child. They need to understand.
Well, originally they hadn't seen him in about 3 years, because we got divorced and he went back to Arizona, and so he wouldn't, you know, Alexis didn't hear from him because she doesn't really function on the computer very well. I can't give her a cell phone. She's had that taken away. But he could call her on the house phone, or she could call him, whatever. You know, there's nobody standing in the way. At Christmas time, he said, okay, it's about time. The girls need to come see me. I need to see them. And I said, okay. But Alexis is medically fragile. I've spoke with her doctors and her therapist, and we all agree that she should not fly. Her sisters, you know, it's put a big wedge between them. They used to be extremely, extremely close. And my youngest daughter, she's struggling with it. She doesn't know how to deal with it. And so I said, you know, and then when spring break came, he said, oh, I'm going to drive out there instead. I'll just drive out there and get our youngest daughter. And I said, okay, well, if you're going to drive, well, then, sure, okay, you can take Alexis. I will give you names of doctors to call if you have any problems. I will give you all of her pump, her insulin pump stuff for a week. I will give you all of her meds for a week in her medication box. I will give you the cannabis oil that she's taking for a week. I will give you a week's worth of diapers. Your wife will have to bathe her because she cannot be left in the bathroom alone. And somebody's going to need to be with her at all times. She can't be left alone. And so instead of addressing that, he just sent my other daughter a round-trip ticket to fly out there. So my other daughter flew out there for spring break. They drove her to San Diego to see SeaWorld, and he bought Alexis a T-shirt. They drove back home. Kimber gets on the plane and comes home, and that's about it. She just has a T-shirt for her sister. And, you know, Alexis said, when do I get to see Dad, Mom? When do I get to go see him? So all I can say is someday, baby. Someday.
Well, who jumped ship? Is your mother alive? Does she come to visit you?
No, my mother-in-law.
Well, any member of the family.
My parents try to help me. they've both had their medical issues over this past year. One suffered a stroke, and the other one had a really bad seizure and was hospitalized for it. And so I can't leave her over there for Father's Day,
no,
for instance.
But
I was
asking, have they abandoned you? So many.
No, my parents haven't. My sister did, but my parents haven't.
That's good. And your mother-in-law and your in-laws, they have abandoned you or not?
Yes, the one in Germany did. He promised that nothing would change after the divorce, but it all changed.
Well, the one in Germany, unfortunately, was accused of molesting your child, so I'm sure that wasn't good relations, you know. I'm sure the relations went south after that.
Actually, it wasn't so bad. You know, he actually came out to visit after the divorce happened. He came here and stayed with us for a week, and then he went over to Arizona and spent a week with his son, and he doesn't talk to me anymore, or he doesn't send the kids Christmas or birthday presents like he used to or anything. So, yeah, it's changed everything.
Yeah, right. Well, does your child attend school anymore or not?
No, she was going to high school, but unfortunately she had very horrible and non-understanding special education teacher. Alexis would be in class, and you know she falls asleep. She falls asleep while she's talking to you. She falls asleep while she's playing cards or sitting on the toilet. You know, she just, because the seizures wipe her out. And so the teacher told me that I had to bring in a yoga ball, and Alexis had to sit on a yoga ball so she wouldn't fall asleep. Well, she'd fall asleep on the yoga ball and fall to the ground. And then they would make all the rest of the class stare at her. If Alexis acted out or did something, they would make the rest of the class stop and just stare at her to make her feel bad. And Alexis would get very frustrated, very angry, and she tried to hit her teacher on the arm a couple of times. And believe me, it's not very hard. You know, it's just kind of just slapping her hand a little bit. But the teacher had a fit and called the cops and had us into the office and trying to figure out what to do. And the school told me she was the only teacher that was available, so I decided to take her out of school. It wasn't worth it at that point.
Now, so did she have to take a school bus there and back, or did you drive her to school and back?
Either one. We tried both.
I see. And the school bus, I can imagine there might have been some incidences there as well.
Oh, there was a couple of times where Alexis got on the bus, immediately had a seizure, threw up, so they just basically went around the block and brought her back home.
Right.
So
how are her peers treating her? Are they more tolerant, or are they do they ridicule her?
No, all her friends are gone. They just moved on. They don't really have anything to do with her anymore. She does have a boyfriend, a little boy that she met when she was in school, and he comes over and sees her maybe once a month, and it's really nice. That's basically her only friend, you know, really.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that.
It's sweet that they have each other.
Yes, it is. Is this a vaccine-injured child as well, or just...
I don't think so. His mother said that he was born autistic, but she doesn't believe it was a vaccine injury.
Okay. Well, anyway, so how are your finances? What kind of extraordinary expenses do you find yourself with because your child is vaccine-injured?
Well, thank goodness she has... Thank goodness she has insurance. You know, she has Medicaid, and currently her father has an insurance policy on her as well. So medical stuff is covered. Although the one medication that she uses that seems to help with the pain and the seizures is the cannabis, and that is very expensive. So that comes out of pocket.
Well,
I can't work.
I hate to tell you this, but anything that's actually going to help her is not going to be covered by your insurance.
I know how that works now, definitely. But you know, she's and I can't, you know, I can't work because she has to be with somebody at all times. She cannot be left alone. She falls sometimes with these seizures, and she can hurt herself really bad. So she has to be with somebody. Somebody has to be with her, and I can't work. And I've been getting child support for my other daughter, which will end in a year. So I don't know what I'm going to do. She's on all kinds of waiting lists. Apparently New Mexico is the worst when it comes to mental health. And so, you know, Alexis is currently on 3 different waiting lists for services. And the big waiting list for the DD waiver, which is supposed to be the really big one that helps a lot, we've been on the waiting list for 5 years. We got another 5 years to go.
Oh, my.
And so I've been told by many people not to hold my breath, that it's probably going to go away completely before that time hits. So it's really bad. Currently, I get 25 hours a week respite services. So I have a gal that comes to the house and sits with Alexis so that I can go to the grocery store, I can get things done that I need to do, or just have a nap and have peace and quiet. But when Alexis turns 21 next month, that's taken away. Her respite hours go from 25 a week to 100 hours a year. So that's gonna be hard. I don't know what I'm gonna do.
I wish I had an answer for you. This is extremely, this is the problem so many people are facing, and this is why divorce in the face of these problems is just so terrible. You need the support. You need another adult to contend with this and pick up the expenses of it, because the child support stopped when she turned 21.
Yeah, she doesn't get child support from her father at all. She just gets the she gets Social Security disability, and she gets the Medicaid insurance. I'm very, very grateful. Very, very lucky. I met a great man, so I have a wonderful boyfriend that helps tremendously. And Alexis loves him. She thanks me every day. Please, or thank you so much for bringing Andy into our lives. She loves him to death, and he loves her. And they get along great. Every Thursday night, he makes her mow the lawn. So it's about the only thing she does all week long, but she's very excited about it now. And, you know, but I have that support, the mental support, the physical support.
That's quite remarkable, and I'm really happy to hear it, you know, because, as you say, everybody left. The last thing you expect was for someone to come in.
Yes,
know?
That's true.
So I'm very happy to hear that, you know. So what would you like to say to parents who are thinking about vaccinating their children?
Well, my new motto is educate before you vaccinate. You know, I wish that I had gone in a little more informed. I just saw the commercials on TV, and just like everyone else, it sounds so wonderful, and I want to protect my daughter. Well, you got to do a little more than that. You need to actually research. You need to get online, and you need to read stories, pros and cons. Get a good idea of what is going on, and if you want to take that risk, if you think that the benefit outweighs the risk, I say no, it doesn't. But it's a decision that a parent needs to make. I'm very much against these schools doing it behind parents' backs and everything. You need to know. You need to be,
right.
You know.
And if something happens to your child, they don't have to disclose it because it has to do with a personal issue, a sexually related. Well, give me a break.
That's unbelievable.
Unbelievable. But what I want to say here is that I interviewed my doctor. I have a skin doctor. And I said, do you, as a skin doctor, do you treat HPV? He said, yes. I said, well, how serious is that? He said, oh, it's very serious. You get warts, you know, in your, I guess, vaginal area, and I treat that. I said, oh, okay. Well, I see that you have a line outside your door waiting to see you whenever I come here, and I would assume you probably see 500 patients a week. He said, probably. And I said, well, you're an elderly gentleman, so I would have to guess maybe you've been practicing for 50 years. And he said, that's about right. So I said, okay, so 50 years, 500 patients a week. How many patients have you had for HPV? And he said, one. And I said, one. And I said, how old was that patient? And he said, 48. So that's
wow.
So you know how prevalent it is. This is the same way I figured out that vaccines caused autism is by talking to the parents. And they all said, but the doctor said it wasn't the vaccine. And I remember thinking, I didn't even ask if it was the vaccine. Why does everybody keep bringing up, but the doctor said it wasn't the vaccine, you know? Why? Because it's the vaccine. So, well, this is, we only have a few minutes left. I think your report is so essential. Can you think of anything you left out that, obviously you don't have the free time you once had, certainly your liberty as a person with grown children, you are not enjoying this liberty as, you know, people can't wait to be empty nesters, wait till the birds fly, and they get to enjoy life. This is not one of the options for you.
No. No, and, you know, it's affected my younger daughter immensely, you know, because she misses her big sister. She was a little sister, and she says, I'm not anymore. I was forced to be the big sister, and I don't want to be. I want my big sister to teach me about boys. I want my big sister to teach me about makeup. She's gone.
Yeah. Well, that's what people don't realize. Your child is taken away, and you have a completely different child.
Yeah.
Well.
Completely, you know, and then it's things just seem to you know, get worse. One thing brings up another, you know, the medical issues, it seems like it's never ending. You know, and I talk to and I'm friends with so many other people going through the same thing through Facebook and through other websites, and it's just, it's horrible. It is absolutely horrible. And, you know, even worse than Alexis, it's killed people. It has caused people to just drop dead. Parents have lost their children. And it is for no reason.
Well, I always tell people, if you visit the website truthaboutgardasil.org, there are a lineup of the most beautiful, healthy-looking girls. It practically looks like an endorsement for the product. But these girls are dead. These healthy, vibrant, fresh-faced children are now dead.
Yeah.
So, and also the PowerPoint presentation that is on that website, I must point this out because it's extremely important.
Yes, because like the CDC and the FDA, they keep trying to tell us that it's a coincidence, and the vaccine makers, it's a coincidence. No, it's not a coincidence. It is not a coincidence.
And on top of it, they're giving young girls HPV because that presentation shows you that before only middle-aged women were getting HPV, and now since the advent of Gardasil, teenagers are. There's
it's
no
even causing
there.
Girls to get cervical cancer.
That's right. They decided to give it to the boys. That's what the FDA decided to do after they saw this presentation. So if this doesn't wake everybody up, I don't know what will. And thank you very much, Tracy Wolf, for coming on today and sharing your hair-raising story about your daughter.
Well, thank you
Alexis.
Very much. Thank you very much for allowing me to tell this. It needs people need to know.
Well, please spread it everywhere, as I will. Okay?
Thank you. I will.
And call Dr. Carly. I'll send you her link.
Great. Thank you very much.